Serbia.
Serbia.
Bitch, I'm a hell of that stuff. You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
You make a grown man cry.
Cry.
Grab the oil, the gasoline. I ride smooth. She's a clean machine.
This is the Quality News Network. The New York Times reports the Pentagon is debating whether to temporarily increase U.S. troop levels by 20,000. The so-called surge option would be designed to increase security, particularly in Baghdad. Currently, there are approximately 144,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. In Washington, a congressional report by the Government Accounting Office recommends lawmakers take another look at U.S. policies in Iraq and Afghanistan. The GAO says Iraq's security continues to deteriorate. In Afghanistan, they say the Taliban is rebounding. Lebanon has begun 3 days of mourning. For the sixth time in 2 years, a prominent anti-Syrian political leader has been assassinated. In Beirut today, Lebanese cabinet minister Pierre Gemayel was ambushed in traffic and shot to death. Lebanon's political stability is threatened. Massive street protests are expected. The Lebanese say they're also expecting a vicious power struggle that could topple the government. In New York today, the UN Security Council formally approved an international tribunal to try suspects accused of murdering former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. His 2005 assassination led to Syrian military expulsion from Lebanon after more than 25 years. In the Gaza Strip, two humanitarian aid workers for the International Red Cross have been released after being kidnapped earlier today. The abduction is one in a string of such incidents involving aid workers and journalists. In Nepal, the government signed a peace deal with Maoist insurgents, ending a decade of civil war. At least 12,000 people have died in the conflict. In Paris, seven international partners, including the U.S., signed an agreement to help produce a nuclear fusion reactor. Construction in the south of France starts in 2008. The reactor is designed to provide limitless alternative to fossil fuels. Even if you are an American, you'll need a passport to fly home from a foreign country, even if it's Canada, beginning in mid-January. The Homeland Security Department made its announcement today. In New York today, the Court of Appeals ruled unanimously against the state's policy of sending sex offenders who had completed their prison terms to mental institutions. The court ruled specifically in the case of a dozen inmates committed to psychiatric hospitals.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The U.S. government has awarded nearly $200 million in contracts for an additional 2.7 million doses of the avian flu vaccine. Three pharmaceutical companies will produce the vaccine, which will be stockpiled in the event of a pandemic. Federal health authorities announced today that 37% of U.S. babies are born out of wedlock. The increase was most apparent in unwed women in their 20s. The White House today announced it was lowering its annual economic growth forecast. The housing slump is cited. Mattel is recalling 4.5 million Polly Pocket magnetic play sets. Several children have been hospitalized after swallowing magnets that fell off the toys. For the first time, the price of Google shares has gone past the $500 mark. The milestone makes the internet search company worth $154 billion. Apple shares also reached an all-time high today. Analysts speculate the computer company may unveil its first mobile phone, the iPhone, which would include iTunes music player technology. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 5 points at 12,321, NASDAQ up 2 at 2454, S&P 500 up 2 at 1402. You can find more at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund, 5 minutes past the hour.
Lord, I'm a voodoo child.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning. That's right. It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and who expect working Americans to pay for their billionaires' games. And now, brought to you by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, it's the Bruce Birch Radio Program with your host, Bruce Birch.
Well, the night I was born, Lord, I swear the moon turned a fire red.
Good evening. That's right. You found the Bruce Birch Radio Program here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to be back with you this evening. It's about 5 minutes past the hour, and outside my house, a monsoon is raging. It's, good Lord, the rain and the wind is incredible. Apparently, not that anybody else really cares about that. Thought I'd share that with you. Ran a little bit close getting into the studio tonight, but I'm glad to be here, glad to be on with you this evening. We have Thanksgiving rapidly approaching. A lot of interesting stuff that's going on in the news today. Your phone calls are very welcome. I'd love to hear from you tonight and hear what you might have on any topic. That telephone number is 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me if you're inclined to do it. To do that, you can send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. It's B-U-R-C-H, bruce@brucebirch.com. I understand previously on this network, apparently there was a Michael Richards Fest tonight. Good on you. Rip him up. The first story that I want to give you out of the gate. Well, there's a couple. The Bushes seem to be, one of these hoodoo women down in New Orleans after the Katrina catastrophe tragedy, avoidable tragedy occurred, apparently put a curse on George, on his family. And it looks like it's beginning to bear fruit. There's a couple of stories. I think I'll do the first one first. What do you think? The first one first. First daughter, Barbara Bush. She had her purse and cell phone stolen as she had dinner in a restaurant in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and further south of Paraguay, even though she was being guarded by a detail of Secret Service agents. Oh, my God. It was not the only mishap on the two-week trip to Argentina by Barbara. A Secret Service agent on the advance detail got into an altercation with someone after a night out and was badly beaten. The Secret Service said today that the incident was an attempted mugging that occurred while the agent was on his own time. Apparently the agent is doing fine. The purse snatching took place on Barbara's first night in town while she was dining in the picturesque San Telmo neighborhood. According to the reports, the Secret Service agents failed to notice the incident. According to the reports, the Secret Service agents failed to notice the incident. Were they too focused on the Coke on the table, maybe? I don't know. Were they at the bar hanging out? What was going on there? The Secret Service would not comment on the purse snatching and the First Lady's office said they would not comment on any personal trip made by the daughters. There have been recent reports, however, that Jenna Bush has been living and working in Panama as an intern for UNICEF, that dreaded United Nations organization UNICEF. They really hate the UN, those Bushes do. What in the hell were they doing that they didn't notice that a purse had been snatched from the daughter of the president? Or were they hoping that something would happen? I don't know. I'm just saying. One more time. According to the reports, the Secret Service agents failed to notice the incident. Well, there's story number one. Right? Barbara had her cell phone and her purse stolen. Poor baby. Now she gets to deal with getting her ID like the rest of us who lose our stuff. Or maybe she can just call up Dad and he'll send a fake one. Also today, former President George Herbert Walker Bush, took on Arab critics of his son during a testy exchange at a leadership conference in the capital of the U.S. ally in the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. Bush told members of the audience harshly, "My son is an honest man," after the audience harshly criticized the current U.S. leader's foreign policy. The oil-rich Persian Gulf used to be safe territory for former President Bush, but gratitude for the elder Bush, who served as the president, obviously, from 1989 to 1993, when he was handily defeated by Bill Clinton, was overshadowed at the conference by hostility toward his son, whose invasion of Iraq and support for Israel are deeply unpopular in the region. A woman in the audience bluntly told Bush after his speech, quote, "We do not respect your son. We do not respect what he's doing all over the world." The elder Bush appeared stunned as others in the audience whooped and whistled in approval. Woo! He appeared stunned. Okay, this is the same guy who went into the grocery store and, went up to the checkout and had one of those scanner things that you could scan your own food, you know what I'm saying? It was brand new back in 93 or 92, I think it was. And he didn't know what to do. He had no clue as to what to do. No clue at all. Because why? Because he probably hasn't shopped for his own food since he was, he probably never has. Again, he appeared stunned, as if the world doesn't revolve around him. Oh, my God. And then a college student told Bush his belief that the U.S. wars were aimed at opening markets for American companies and said globalization was contrived for America's benefit at the expense of the rest of the world. Bush was having none of it. He said, quote, "I think that's weird and it's nuts to suggest that everything we do is because we're hungry for money." Oh, my God. "To suggest that everything we do is because we're hungry for money," he said, "I think that's crazy." He said, "I think you need to go back to school." And which school would that be, Mr. Bush? Ill? Just asking the question. The hostile comments came during a question-and-answer session after Bush finished a folksy address on leadership by telling the audience how deeply hurt he feels when his presidential son is criticized. this is not false laughter, folks. I really am laughing. I think this is absurd. And what cave is he living in? I mean, 65% of America thinks his son is a complete freaking moron, and this guy says, "I think it's weird and it's nuts to suggest that everything we do is because we're hungry for money." Oh, my God. Okay, Bush also said, his voice quivering, "This son is not going to back away. He's not going to change his view because some poll says this or some poll says that, or some heartfelt comments from the lady who feels deeply in her heart about something. You can't be president of the United States and conduct yourself if you're going to cut and run. This is going to work out in Iraq. I understand the anxiety. It's not easy." He's not going to back away. This son is not going to back away. Why? Because he's a sociopath. He doesn't care. Right? You know what sociopathology is, don't you? It's a marked absence of concern for others. It's a delight in the pain and anguish of others. It's George Bush, in a nutshell. Bush also told the audience its derisive hoots were mild compared to the reaction he got in Germany in the 1980s after persuading the country to deploy U.S. nuclear missiles. He told the audience, including dozens of women in black robes and headscarves, he was extremely proud of his sons, both George and Jeb. He said the happiest day of his life was Election Day in 1998, when George and Jeb were elected to the governorships of Texas and Florida. But he also described the pain he feels when his sons are attacked. He said, quote, "I can't begin to tell you the pride I feel in my two sons. When your son's under attack, it hurts. You're determined to be at his side and help him in any way you possibly can." One audience member asked the former president what advice he gives his son on Iraq. Bush said the presence of reporters in the audience prevented him from revealing his advice. He also declined to comment on his expectations for the findings of the Iraq study group. The group is expected to issue its report soon. He says, quote, "I have strong opinions on a lot of these things, but the reason I can't voice them is if I did what you asked me to do, tell you what advice I gave my son, that would then be flashed all over the world." Yeah, well, I got to tell you, Herbert, your son's a moron. And I'm sorry that you feel bad about that. If I were you, I would feel bad about ever having had him to begin with. Okay? All right. I'm being, that's interesting. I'm being told that it was under the auspices of UNICEF that Jenna apparently went to Paraguay shortly after the Bush family bought the 100,000 acres there. Huh. Inside connections. Yes, the connections run wide and deep in the mafia of the Bush administration. Let's go ahead and take our break. When we come back, we'll hit a couple other stories. We'll take your phone calls if you want to be part of the program. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. This is Bruce Birch for the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool. At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Welcome back to The Horn. This is Bruce Birch on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. Glad to be back with you after that short break. Now, if you want to get in on the show, you know the number, 1-877-443. I'm going to roll through it pretty quickly here. 1-877-443-2367. That's the number, baby. Oh, my God. We were talking about George Bush going into the break and his dad and his brother and how, you know, just how crazy and screwed up they are. And I just think it's funny. You know, that these people still think that America thinks like, you know, it's, they see themselves, ladies and gentlemen, these people see themselves as the aristocracy of America. They see themselves, they see Bill Clinton in the election of him as an aberration. They see themselves as the ruling class, the moneyed, the powered, the propertied elite. George Bush and John Adams would have gotten along just dandy. John Adams, of course, the second president of the United States, who advocated for a more of a kingship here than a presidency and a democracy. Stupid, unpropertied people. Don't you know your place? Your place isn't to criticize us. We are the powered elite. We run things. You do as you're told. You're an employee. Now get back in line. Stop talking about it. Stop speaking up. But the reality is that the majority of the world, and now the majority of America, looks at these people and says, don't think we need those people in charge anymore. They look at them and they say to themselves, what in the hell did we do? Even the Republicans are saying it. Even the neocons, who drug El moronic Bush the younger into the Iraq quagmire, you know, Viet Rock, right? Even the neocons who dragged him into the Iraq quagmire are now backing away, going, well, you know, the military strategy that they put in place didn't work. However. Had they done it the way we wanted to do it, we'd all be okay now. And I'm laughing because they're unraveling at the seams and they're pointing the finger at each other. And you know what happens when you point your finger, right? If you point your finger at someone, you've got five pointing back at you, right? Well, that's what's happening. They're pointing the finger. You know, even Pat Buchanan and Babe Buchanan, those right-wing nutbag racist freaks, are, I'm calling them names tonight. I'm just in that kind of mood. Or, they're doing their thing, and they're now coming out against the president going, well, you know, we just need to close off the borders. We just need to keep all those brown people out of here. If we could do that, then everything would be fine. And we never should have gone into Iraq. We never should have put all these social programs in place. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And what's crazy about it, what's truly crazy about it, is that they trudge forward oblivious. Completely oblivious to anything that George Bush says, well, he's not going to govern according to some poll. Well, what if a poll says that they, you know, what if the poll is a poll they want to, let me just be quiet before I get into trouble. Deep breath, peach in, green out, peach in, green. No, hell with that. I feel better yelling. All right. Let's go into a couple more stories. I just want to get away. You know, those aristocratical people just piss me off. Now, having said all that, now the powered elite, the moneyed property elite, are saying more troops and sophisticated equipment are needed to bolster Afghanistan's security forces. Isn't that place that the place we took over back in 2001 and two? And it said, "Oh, it's good. It's all good. We got a new government. We got a new president. Yeah, the mayor of Kabul, Hamid Karzai. We got a new government in Afghanistan now. We're good. It's all good. We're good." Well, again, what's happening? The very Taliban that they supposedly crushed and declared victory over now has company-sized brigades. More troops and sophisticated equipment are needed to bolster Afghanistan's security forces, but it is not clear whether more U.S. troops will be deployed there. Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry told Pentagon reporters that U.S. officials will wait until after next week's NATO summit in Latvia. There's a hell of a place to have a NATO summit. To see how many troops other countries plan to provide before deciding if more U.S. forces must be sent to Afghanistan. Eikenberry is quoted as saying, "I think it will be best at this point to wait and see what NATO is able to provide." All right. Let me just say this before I go any further on this radio program. When you go into a country by yourself and you invade the country and you blast it back to kingdom come and then expect the countries of the North American, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization to step in and fix it, it reminds me of when I was an electrician and had to go back behind someone and fix their mistakes when they wired a house and almost burned it down. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. U.S. military leaders have been pushing NATO members to meet their commitments and provide more troops in Afghanistan. For months, officials have said that NATO nations have provided only 85% of the support they promised. There is a NATO-led force of about 30,000 troops in Afghanistan, including some 12,000 U.S. troops. An additional 11,000 American troops are there under U.S. control, conducting counterterrorism operations, in other words, spiriting people away in the middle of the night, and other training and reconstruction duties. See that bridge over there we just built? We're going to have to blow that sucker up now. The Afghan Minister of Defense, General Abdul Rahim Wardak, whom are we sure he's not the Klingon Minister of Defense? Rahim Wardak. Okay. I know. Okay. He met Tuesday with Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld. Oh, I just read the name and all kinds of things flashed through my mind. Apparently, he said his country needs more firepower, transport planes, and armored vehicles. The Afghans have asked for additional helicopters and aircraft that can move troops and supplies throughout the mountainous regions. Now, let's just stop for a moment, shall we? Take a deep breath and remember how stupid these people are. Eikenberry said, did you like that? Eikenberry said some body armor, helmets, and other equipment are already being provided to the Afghan National Army. He added that there have been no final decisions on what other weapons and aircraft would be provided, and therefore he could not provide any cost estimate. Wardak. General Wardak said Afghanistan is accelerating its training program for the Army and hopes to have about 70,000 troops by October 2008. Oh, Jesus. 7 years after we invaded their country, they're going to be able to stand up for themselves? 7 years? Okay, there's got to be a recruiting problem here. I mean, there's got to be a recruiting problem. And the same thing in Iraq. Why is there a recruiting problem? Well, because the Afghanis who joined the so-called official Afghan army are going to be fighting their brothers. They're going to be fighting their cousins, perhaps they're even their dad, their grandfather. And you know what? They don't want to do that. Because the Taliban, you know, there's not some magical race of Talibanis, okay? The Taliban is the Afghans. And the Afghanis are a lot of the make up a lot of the Taliban. And a lot of them are brothers. Some, and that's just the reality. It's as if we had a civil war in this country again. And they were recruiting the official army, the U.S. Army or whatever, was recruiting in Virginia to try to, to get troops to join the U.S. Army, and the Confederate Army was also recruiting in Virginia. It's the same kind of problem. So, you know, no, they're not going to get 70,000 troops by October 2008. I mean, that's 2 years away, folks. 70,000 troops by October 2008. That's just absurd. Take a deep breath. Time for a break. This is the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm glad to be back with you. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. There's a certain amount of insanity surrounding the talk about sending 20,000 more U.S. troops to Iraq. We already have 144,000 troops there. There are about 20,000 contractors there, and about 6,000 British troops. That's 170,000 total. How's adding another 12% going to be decisive? Already the U.S. has inserted more troops into Baghdad, and we've seen how well that's worked out. The number of Iraqi deaths has skyrocketed. And what's all this talk about making a final push? It's not like U.S. troops will be...
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court?
Multi-sided.
You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security?
Who are the U.S. troops? Really?
they want to know. That's right, you're back on the Bruce Burch radio program. Oh, my God. What was going on there, man? Oh, my goodness. You talk about multitasking. That was great. I enjoyed that. That was fun. I was trying to listen to everything at once, and my head, I thought, you know, I smelled smoke, and I wasn't even smoking. It's 35 minutes past the hour. I love you, Bob. Oh, man. Okay, so going back to Wardock from the planet Remulon. I can't believe this stuff, man. Fiction could not be... They couldn't write this stuff and have it come out as nice. All right, let's get away from Wardock. He's beginning to upset me a little bit. Now, the House Democrats, that's right, the ones who are taking over, they've decided already to hold a forum in December on the future of Iraq, featuring former administration and military officials. Former administration and military officials. That sounded very official, didn't it? House Speaker Designate, that's what they're calling her, House Speaker Designate Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, said in a statement, "I look forward to hearing from our distinguished group of experts as House Democrats discuss the deteriorating situation in Iraq." Okay, quick reframe, Nancy. Don't call it deteriorating. Let's call it simply screwed. Let's rewrite this sentence, okay? She said, "I look forward to hearing from our distinguished group of experts as House Democrats discuss the screwed situation in Iraq." Doesn't that sound better, folks? The panel will include former National Security Advisor I never have figured out how the hell to say his name. Brzezinski, that's it. Former Ambassador Richard Holbrooke and retired Major General John Batista will appear at the December 5th forum. The forum will be held on the same day the Senate Armed Service Committee is scheduled to commence hearings on Defense Secretary nominee Robert the Bone Crusher Gates. He also said, "We know that stay the course is not working, has not made our country safer, has not honored the commitment to our troops, and has not brought stability to the region. But what it has done is make the listeners and of Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all these other morons who spout garbage. It's made them all have a really neat catch line, because what they can do is go, well, you know, here's what we got to do. You have to understand, we have to stay the course, because if we don't stay the course, the terrorists will win, and if they win, they'll be running over America, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to come here and kill your babies and have them for supper, and they're going to light them on fire and put them on a spit." On this radio program, we say stay the course means I'm an idiot. That's right. Let's replace that stay the course with I'm an idiot. Okay, let's read the sentence again, shall we? Let's do it one more time for the world. "We know that I'm an idiot is not working, has not made our country safer, and has not honored the commitment to our troops, and has not brought stability to the region." That sounds so much better, doesn't it? Yes, it does. All right, so the House Dems are getting busy. And, one more Bush story. Got to run this one by you. We were talking about the curse, right? Well, here it is. Here's another one. Another Bush curse story. Apparently, obviously, what is, all right, here we go. Three Honolulu Police Department motorcycle officers escorting President George W. Bush's motorcade this morning had their motorcycles slip out from under them at about 7:10 a.m. on the same stretch of rain-slickened pavement at Hickam Air Force Base. Now, apparently, they were escorted to the press. You know, here we go. You know, now I feel bad for the officers that wrecked, but, you know, if you get around this guy, you got to expect certain things to happen. You got to expect certain things to happen. You know, I'm thinking that the next thing we're going to hear about is a piano falling out of the sky and hitting somebody on the head who happens to be near the motorcade or something like that. Now, that's the third cursed Bush story of the evening. If I find any more, I will be sure to share them with you. Okay? I will be sure to share them with you. Now, one more interesting story. Speaking about how nice we are here in the United States, we are the most accommodating nation on the face of the planet, aren't we? I mean, aren't we the melting pot of the world? Everyone wants to come here, right? They want to run over our borders. The terrorists want to come here and kill us. The Hispanic folks, the Latinos want to come here and work. And the Canadians, well, they just want to come and vacation in Florida. But the apparently, visitors coming to our country who actually just want to come and visit are experiencing a lot of rudeness. Immigration officials, rude immigration officials and visa delays keep millions of foreign visitors away from the United States. Millions. I mean, we're not talking thousands. We're not talking tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. We're talking millions here, all right? That apparently has hurt the country's already battered image and cost the U.S. billions of dollars in lost revenue, according to an advocacy group formed to push for a better system. To drive home the point, the Discover America Partnership released the result of a global survey on Monday, which showed that international travelers see the United States as the world's worst country in terms of getting a visa, and once you have it, making your way past rude immigration officials. Where are they coming into? Perhaps New York, I don't know. I'm going to be in trouble for that one. The survey of 2011 international travelers in 16 countries, and this is very scientific, was conducted by RT Strategies, a Virginia-based polling firm, for Discover America Partnership, a group launched in September with multi-million dollar backing from a range of companies that include the Intercontinental Hotels Group, Anheuser-Busch, and Walt Disney Parks and Resorts. Likely coalition. So if you know an immigration official, tell him he needs to take a break. All right, go have a cup of coffee. Take a deep breath. It's okay. Okay? It's all right. All right. Moving along. Kofi Annan, that dreaded U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan, you know, the one with the oil for food scandal and all the other stuff that's going on with him. He's just one of them evil, evil ones. He's a part of the evil empire. U.S. forces, he says, are trapped in Iraq. And he says that Washington must find the right time to leave without plunging the country deeper into chaos. Now, here's a guy who might... He's actually speaking some truth here. Oh, my God, truth. Oh, my God. He says, quote, on the question of the military presence, it is a difficult issue. The U.S. is in a way trapped in Iraq. Trapped in the sense it cannot stay and it cannot leave. Oh, my goodness. He's actually speaking some truth. This is pretty cool. He also added to his comments, the timing of its departure will have to be optimal. An eventual withdrawal of U.S. forces should not lead to a further deterioration, Annan cautioned. Well, our presence there surely is providing a lot of security, ain't it? Bodies are piling up in the streets over there, for Christ's sake. He said Washington, should instead...
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bruce Birch. We experienced a power outage where I am, and so what we're going to do, it was just a brief blink, and what we're going to do is go ahead and take our break, our quarter of the hour break, and when we come back, I'll be back live with you. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program live. That's right, live and in person on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back after this break.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Quad Wally and Doopy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Man, I love some good old blues. Thank you, Bob. That's great. My telephone is ringing, baby. And it better not be you calling on the line. All right, I won't sing to you anymore. I don't want to, like, you know, hurt your speakers or anything. Had a little bit of a technical difficulty. That happens when the electricity goes away. And, you know, I'm thinking it's time to for the backup generator or something.
nonetheless, I was talking about Kofi Annan. And I don't know if I want to talk about him anymore because maybe he put some hoodoo on me. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, things happen like that. We just got to keep moving along, right? Just got to keep moving along. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. All right, wanted to bring a story to your attention about, and I guess John Fox and Foxed Up was a rerun today, or was a best of, however you want to put it. He does a show here from 5 to 6 every evening and on our network. And, well, you know what, before we do that, let me go ahead and take a caller. It looks like our good friend David from Tennessee is on the line. David, how are you doing tonight?
Well, Bruce, I'm doing really, really well, and it was great to hear that you enjoyed what Lowell George and those wonderful, frisky, you know, madcap guys in Little Feet had to play some long, long years ago.
Well, it was great. Was that just we just heard?
That was Little Feet. That was, oh, telephone is ringing. Might be Chairman now. Well, anyway, don't get me started on that. I called in. If you don't know about Little Feet, I suggest to quit.
Okay.
I can help you with that if you hit a blank wall, but you won't.
Well, you're the music guy, Dave. We need to bring you on board to be our musical director.
Oh, not me. I just, you know, I'm only qualified to listen and buy it. Many others are much more qualified in other areas. One of the other areas they're qualified in is, I brought up tonight the future members of the Bush cabinet. They're all right here. I've got them in front of me.
Okay.
And I did that by Googling Mr. Nixon's cabinet. Because George Bush, he's not going to do anything but recycle cabinet members.
Yep.
Some of these guys are dead, so the next Secretary of State, let's see, William P. Rogers. All right, he's dead. Henry A. Kissinger. Oops. You know, that might not work out, because Henry went to Paris and had a French experience, and the next thing you know, he's saying the war is not a good idea. George will recycle him for sure. What do you think?
Well, you know, Henry is advising him.
He's been dropping by, you know, the some people say as often as once a week. You think maybe he's been dropping by and saying to W, get out. It killed us.
You must get out of Iraq now. I warn you right now. This is the dark side speaking to you.
And then George would say, now, wait a second, Henry. I understand what you're saying, but when you leave and the Fox reporters are on the front stoop of the White House, tell them you're only here for tea and crumpets. Sweet tea and biscuits. You know?
Sweet tea. That's right. Sweet tea. We got to keep it a Southern thing, right? Some barbecue. You came over for some barbecue, right?
Well, but, you know, it could be, it just might be that Henry was there to encourage W. You know, it's not a good idea that you stay there. And then we go down the list of the next cabinet members. Secretary of the Treasury, David Kennedy, he may be dead. John Connally, oh boy, he's really dead. George Shultz, a very important.
Wasn't he in? Didn't he also do some stuff for Reagan as well, or was it George the Younger?
George Shultz has been involved in everything, including any major Republican's permission to go to the toilet since 1972. Please remember that in a very accurate documentary with Condi Rice in the room, when W was considering running for president, he went to Shultz's house and sat down for an interview. I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
9/11, Fahrenheit 9/11, isn't that? I think it is. Might be. You know, and
I do remember.
So Shultz is still alive. He'll get reappointed. Oh, let's see. John Mitchell, Kleindienst, Elliot Richardson. No, those guys are gone. Oh, Earl Butz for agriculture. No, he got killed in a pig stampede in Iowa in the mid-'80s. Never mind him.
John Dean.
Oh. Secretary
at George Shultz. I don't think John Dean is it would be in the cabinet though. What do you think?
Oh, it's a different Dent. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was Frederick Dent, Secretary of Commerce. He's long gone. We don't have to worry about that. Well, let's see here. Secretary of Housing, George Romney. Suppose that guy in Massachusetts is any relation? Could be.
It's his dad, isn't it? Isn't Mitt Romney the son of George Romney?
I think that's the whole idea. The place I'm headed is that W has no place to go but backwards. It's like the key bird that, you know, flies in ever smaller circles, and the next thing you know, the key bird's head goes up the key bird's bum, and he says, naughty word. It's dark in here. And there's George. That's all he's doing. He's reporting. He's continuing to reappoint guys that have been there before with a failure. It's like hiring bad football coaches over and over and over.
And the interesting thing, too, David, is that, you know, he's given Dick Cheney free reign. And based on everything that I've read, the folks like George, his dad, and Brent Scowcroft and Jim Baker and some of these other retreads are about to challenge Cheney, and we'll see what happens. I think Cheney may take a fall here very soon, and I don't mean on his gun either. I mean they may make him the scapegoat.
If it could be aired publicly, that would be such a healthy thing if the challenge to Cheney, because only recently, within the last year, I found out that Cheney had created a larger group of employees, a larger structure underneath him than exists for the rest of the presidency. And he, through arm twisting, has made it impossible through a presidential order for anybody to know how many employees there are on the vice presidential staff. It's considered a national security issue. If anyone asks how many people work for the vice president, I'm sorry, that's a national security issue. You can't know that. Well, how much is in the budget for your vice presidential staff? I'm sorry, you can't know that. He has a complete parallel structure, a complete parallel group of employees that are probably much more so than George's people running the government.
That's kind of scary, you know?
I was frightened by it. I researched it. It's true. Dick Cheney has a staff that is as large as the president, and most Washington insiders are much more concerned about what Dick Cheney's staff think about things than what W's staff thinks about things. So he can go all around the nation, all around the world, saying anything he wants to say. Lord knows he says some pretty interesting stuff, but, you know, if the guy pulling the strings that go through the back of George's coat up to the mouth, you know, if it doesn't make Cheney happy, nothing's going to happen. So let's hope that some people challenge Dick Cheney.
Well, that's what I'm reading. I don't know. Time will tell. But that's one of the biggest reasons that I've read that Bob Gates was nominated for the defense secretary was that. I mean, you know, he was offered the job of the DNI, the department the director of national intelligence, which John Death Squad Negroponte is doing, and he turned it down, but apparently, from what I'm reading, this is sort of like in one of those Washington Insider columns that I read, was that Jim Baker, Brent Scowcroft, and George the Senior. Convinced Bob Gates to go ahead and be the nominee, and told George the Younger that this was going to be the guy of choice, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, because Bob Gates is very much against from what I'm reading. He's very much against the Dick Cheney stay the course till everyone is dead in Iraq, point of view. I mean, you know, he immediately, some of the things that I've read now, you know, of course he's going to be the guy that sort of comes in and redirects things so that it looks like the administration is changing course, but in actuality, they're still gearing up for Iran right now. You know,
I fear the attack on Iran, but if that Gates guy actually did turn down that position, but now he's involved, the timing of that and what you've just outlined speaks volumes. And according to my clock, Bob and Agnes must be just jumping up and down for a 10 o'clock break. So
probably are. They probably are. And you know what? We need to probably go ahead and take that, Dave.
And congratulations for getting through your power break without too much of an interruption.
Right on. Well, thank you, David. And give me a call again. Glad to have you aboard, my friend.
Oh, thanks for letting me get on and, make noise. You're doing a great job. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Dave. That's our good friend David from Tennessee. We are hammering at the top of the hour. It's 11 o'clock here on the East Coast. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back after these news.
This is the Quality News Network. The New York Times reports the Pentagon is debating whether to temporarily increase U.S. troop levels by 20,000. The so-called surge option would be designed to increase security, particularly in Baghdad. Currently, there are approximately 144,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. In Washington, a congressional report by the Government Accounting Office recommends lawmakers take another look at U.S. policies in Iraq and Afghanistan. The GAO says Iraq's security continues to deteriorate. In Afghanistan, they say the Taliban is rebounding. Lebanon has begun 3 days of mourning. For the sixth time in 2 years, a prominent anti-Syrian political leader has been assassinated. In Beirut today, Lebanese cabinet minister Pierre Gemayel was ambushed in traffic and shot to death. Lebanon's political stability is threatened. Massive street protests are expected. The Lebanese say they're also expecting a vicious power struggle that could topple the government. In New York today, the UN Security Council formally approved an international tribunal to try suspects accused of murdering former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. His 2005 assassination led to Syrian military expulsion from Lebanon after more than 25 years. In the Gaza Strip, two humanitarian aid workers for the International Red Cross have been released after being kidnapped earlier today. The abduction is one in a string of such incidents involving aid workers and journalists. In Nepal, the government signed a peace deal with Maoist insurgents, ending a decade of civil war. At least 12,000 people have died in the conflict. In Paris, seven international partners, including the U.S., signed an agreement to help produce a nuclear fusion reactor. Construction in the south of France starts in 2008. The reactor is designed to provide limitless alternative to fossil fuels. Even if you are an American, you'll need a passport to fly home from a foreign country, even if it's Canada, beginning in mid-January. The Homeland Security Department made its announcement today. In New York today, the Court of Appeals ruled unanimously against the state's policy of sending sex offenders who had completed their prison terms to mental institutions. The court ruled specifically in the case of a dozen inmates committed to psychiatric hospitals.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network.
Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, A Conversation with America, designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The U.S. government has awarded nearly $200 million in contracts for an additional 2.7 million doses of the avian flu vaccine. Three pharmaceutical companies will produce the vaccine, which will be stockpiled in the event of a pandemic. Federal health authorities announced today that 37% of U.S. babies are born out of wedlock. The increase was most apparent in unwed women in their 20s. The White House today announced it was lowering its annual economic growth forecast. The housing slump is cited. Mattel is recalling 4.5 million Polly Pocket magnetic play sets. Several children have been hospitalized after swallowing magnets that fell off the toys. For the first time, the price of Google shares has gone past the $500 mark. The milestone makes the Internet search company worth $154 billion. Apple shares also reached an all-time high today. Analysts speculate the computer company may unveil its first mobile phone, the iPhone, which would include iTunes music player technology. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 5 points at 12,321, NASDAQ up 2 at 2454, S&P 500 up 2 at 1402. You can find more at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund, 5 minutes past the hour.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
That's right. You're back on the air of the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I'm Bruce, and you're not. I had to steal that line. I like that from that old Chevy Chase stuff there. About 8 minutes past the hour, we ran over a little bit with our good friend David, and he was well worth it. Well worth it. Joining us now is our good friend Jim, calling from an undisclosed location somewhere on the North American continent. Jim, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Good evening. How are you, Bruce?
I'm doing great, my friend.
I have a new nickname for you.
You're having a what now?
A new nickname for you.
Okay, what's that?
Bruce-alosis.
Bruce-alosis?
Bruce-alosis.
Bruce-alosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So those
can you give me an idea behind the inspiration?
I don't know. Bruce-alosis is actually a disease of saddling horses, and I was just thinking about that. I don't know why. But I thought, you know, those people.
Now I'm a disease?
No. Those people who are, shall we say, moved by your words and led by your thoughts and ideas, they have a case of brucellosis.
Oh, okay.
Have that.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Just kidding.
I don't know that my thoughts or ideas are that inspirational, but, you know, hey, if there's a disease you're going to name after me, that's the one.
Okay, that's fine. You know, it looks as though as November 21st moves into November 22nd in just a few minutes, literally, and it already is. But the world is hardly quiet, is it?
No, the gunshots are ringing around the world, aren't they?
I can't say too much about what the previous caller said. That's above my pay grade, and I'm certain that there is a shadow government, and that's what I'll just refer to it as, and I will leave it where I found it. But I wanted to make one comment that tomorrow, or, well, soon to be today, will mark the 43rd anniversary of the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
It will.
And he's a man who had a great deal of influence on my life. As a boy, I had the opportunity to shake his hand in Columbia, South Carolina, when he was there running for president. And later on, a couple of years later, I had raised my right hand and sworn to obey every word he said. Still a boy, really. And I would have died for that man. Gladly. And I will never forget the morning of November 22nd, because I had seen him on television. And he was, I think, at Fort Worth, and he really looked good, and his wife looked good. They'd just gotten over some bad things that have happened to them with the loss of their son, Patrick Bouvier. And I just remarked, God, he really looks good, and how proud I was to be able to serve a man like that. And then when I was coming back from class, of course, I went back in those days, plebes had to march in the gutter. We couldn't walk on the sidewalk. I was right in front of the chapel, Summerall Chapel, at the Citadel. Went in upper class, and I saw the garrison flag at the end of the parade ground at half mast. And I knew something had happened. And it broke my heart.
Even today, Jim, people who were alive in 1963... Everyone knows where they were and what they did when they found out that John F. Kennedy was killed. You know? And his loss, the loss of his life to our nation still remains a huge hole. There's a huge hole there.
How different things might have been.
Yeah, who knows what could have happened had he and his brother lived full, long lives.
Exactly. But I believe there was a plaque on his desk, and I have a portrait in my living room, and on that plaque is, of course, is his portrait and the seal, but beneath that picture is a brass plaque, and on it is inscribed what was on the plaque on his desk: "Oh God, thy sea is so great, and our ships are so small." After all, he was a naval hero, and he didn't avoid
PT-101, wasn't it?
Right. And as a young man, he was in very poor health, dangerously poor health. And it took special strings to be pulled by his father to get him into the Navy. And I'm not trying to make President Kennedy in death beyond what he was in life. But he was a vibrant human being. He was a brilliant man. And he had so many incredible ideas about the future, and it was such a bright horizon. And I can remember him saying, you know, on one occasion when he addressed the commencement in June of 63, when he talked about the importance of the Soviet Union in World War II and how they had lost 20 million people. And he was not insensitive to that fact, even though he and Khrushchev had hammered each other and we'd almost gone to war with that nation. He still was able to, you know, reflect on that. And then how his view of going into space and the fact that we would do this not because it was easy, but because it was hard. And it was the thing to do and to conquer other worlds. And some of his other things that he used to say about how important life was and how we're all simply, you know, basically, we because we, you know, came from the sea and would return to the sea eventually. I guess that's why he loved it so much. And when I worked in Washington at the Andrews and the Pentagon on Sunday afternoons, there was there were lots of things to do in D.C., but one of the things I used to do probably once or twice every 2 or 3 months, I would always go up to Arlington in Sunday afternoon, but it was cold, there weren't many people there, and I used to sit there and look at that flame, and you could see on the plinths surrounding the perimeter of the area, excerpt from his speeches. I'll never forget one that I've, it's always, you know, right there in front of me. I can see it now. God's work must truly be our own. And this man had such an influence on my life, and he led me into public service. And I love him very much. And I hope that tomorrow that everyone within the sound of my voice will light a candle for it.
I certainly will, Jim. And as a matter of fact, tomorrow night, one of the things that I had thought of doing was pulling up some speeches from Kennedy and running some clips tomorrow.
Well, I have one that I might call you tomorrow, and I might read just an excerpt from it if I'm around to do this. And it was an undelivered speech that he was scheduled to deliver at the Dallas Trade Bar on 22 November of 63. And it was probably one of the best speeches he ever wrote.
Love to hear it.
But anyway, I didn't mean to depart the track of your program.
Absolutely. You know,
get your good name with that of a horse problem, but I just thought ruthless as well. A little levity there.
We're doing levity tonight, and even, you know, the one thing that I would say that I share with John Kennedy is his love of Corona cigars. The Corona is it's a size of cigar. And I found out that he was a lover of Corona cigars after I had started smoking them, and I thought, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, he certainly did, and he had his other, he had his virtues and he had his vices, and I don't besmirch his memory because of his indiscretions. We all have those in our lives. And like I say, let he is without sin cast the first stone. And I can throw those rocks at John Kennedy. And so there are people who do. And I don't think we've yet had a president and a first lady who have brought so much grace and elegance to the executive mansion. I mean, that was truly a time of grace and elegance and beauty, as well as prodigy. I mean, that man had the intelligence to not assemble him around himself a bunch of idiots and has been. But he took the brains of this country, the existing brains of this country, and he took them as his advisors. And he followed their advice. And when he didn't agree with them, he let them know it. But still, he had sense enough to realize that he would have to have prodigy around him. And these men still survive to this day in their books and words. Not many more around. And they have gone over to the other side. And I'll think of Mrs. Kennedy and how she so ably was able to lead this country through a period of grief and mourning and do it with such grace, dignity, and aplomb. I mean, this woman could sit next to Charles de Gaulle and in perfect French, take this old French warrior and hold him in the palm of her hand. And when Khrushchev saw her, he damn near stepped on his tongue. So, I mean, you know, we've come down the road a long way from the days of John Kennedy and Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy. And I guess I want to say this in this case. The empire has been brought low, and the captives and kings have truly departed.
Jim, I appreciate your call. I got to hit a break, but I you know, I'm glad you brought that to the table this evening. We definitely need to remember tomorrow about higher ideals and what John Kennedy brought to the table himself with those higher ideals.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate your time, and you sound good. You sound strong, vibrant, healthy, and I hope that you continue in that direction and even get better, okay?
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it, and I certainly hope that you have a wonderful evening, what's left of it, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Good night, sir.
Good night. That's our good friend Jim calling in from, well, somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere. Let's go ahead and take our break. When we come back, we'll do a little of this and a little bit of that. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Net.
Operator, give me information. Information. Give me love. Long distance, give me air. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, operator.
Operator.
Information.
Information.
Give me Jesus.
Jesus on the line.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network.
Do you know what you want?
Dad? Let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. We're so sorry if we caused you any pain. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. But there's no one left at home, and I believe I'm gonna rain.
Right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's 24 minutes past the hour. Glad to be back with you again this afternoon, this evening, today, wherever you are, and whatever time you're listening to this. Glad you're listening. We appreciate all of your support. If you want to get in on the show, you can call into our head-on hotline, free speech phone line at 1-877-443-2366. Jim brought up a very interesting, and that was a fantastic call, and he brought up a very interesting point. And actually, I don't know that he actually brought up the point, but the idea that we are devoid, and then Bob ran the promo from his show that talks about when did we go away from being a can-do nation to being one that lives in fear. We have spent so much time over the last 5 years worried about who's going to bomb us next, who's going to come and attack us next, who's going to be the next evil empire, that we're all kind of shell-shocked, aren't we? We're all kind of shocked, the shock and awe that Donald Rumsfeld coined the term for wasn't for the Iraqis, was it? For us, wasn't it? The shock and awe was to shock us. And America is full of shocks, isn't it? People were shocked when they found out that George Bush was lying. People have been shocked to find out, you know, that that we're holding these people without habeas corpus rights, without the ability to challenge their detention in court, that we've legalized torture of these people. People are shocked about that. We have slipped away from principle. We have slipped away from being the country that stood on its record as being the shining city on the hill that everyone wanted to come to, that your parents and my parents perhaps nearly died to get here. And what have we done? What have we become? What have we made of the sacrifice those men and women who served in World War II and other wars to protect our nation? What has become of their sacrifice? What has become of the great New Deal that promised to take care of all Americans? Where is it today? What's the New Deal today? I'm asking all these questions because, you know, as I'm looking at yesteryear, and Jim kind of put me in that mode for a moment. Thank you, Jim. Well, as I'm looking at yesteryear, as I'm looking at the reality of who we were as opposed to who we have become, it shocks me. It makes me wonder, have we not become the very thing that we left in the late 1700s? Have we not become the very thing that we ran away from in order to create a better society? It is a disheartening thought, but you know what? We have to think about it, and we have to take a look at it, because if we don't, we won't change it. If we don't, we won't say to ourselves, enough is enough. We won't say to ourselves, and as I did a couple of years ago, I've got to do something more than just raising hell at my friends and telling them what I think about all of this bull that's going on. And so I started a radio show. You know? And that was my little bit to be able to try to bring down this administration. That's my little bit in the name of democracy, in the name of our forefathers who fought for democracy, such as Thomas Jefferson, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, you name him. How are we honoring their memory today? Are we fighting for justice? Or are we more worried about how we're going to make the next mortgage payment? I hope we're fighting for justice. I hope that we're taking it, the charge that they left for us seriously. Because if we don't take it seriously, what will be left? We will be ruled by, as I said earlier, the powered, propertied, moneyed elite. And they will forever be in charge of our destinies and give us what they want to give us and make us work for how they want to make us work. And, you know, return to the robber baron days. Justice comes in many forms. My hope is that justice will be visited upon our current president very soon. Tell you what I want to do. Let's go ahead and do our bottom of the hour break. As soon as we do that, we will come right back and catch the phone line. We've got a caller on hold, and let's go ahead and do that. This is the Bruce Birch radio program. If you're on hold, hang on. I'll get right to you. I'll be right back.
Universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. With all the attention the media has paid on the torture and abuse of prisoners overseas, we've been neglecting to admit one haunting fact: the way our country treats prisoners right here at home. Prisoners are held in isolation for months at a time. Prisoners are shocked with tasers and stun guns while they're handcuffed or even while they're in restraint chairs. Prisoners are left in those restraint chairs or shackled to the floor here in the United States, sometimes for days on end, left to urinate and defecate on themselves. Fortunately, two judges in recent days have had enough and have cast a spotlight on these horrors. In Michigan, Judge Richard Allen Enslin ordered the state to stop using non-medical restraints in cells after a 21-year-old mentally ill prisoner, Timothy Joe Suiters, died naked and shackled to the cement floor, lying in his own urine after 4 days. The judge said Suiters' treatment amounted to torture. In another case, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a Wisconsin supermax prison resembled a Soviet gulag if the conditions described in a case about inmate Nathan Gillis were accurate. Those conditions, wrote Judge Terrence Evans, included being stripped naked in a small prison cell with nothing except a toilet, forced to sleep on a concrete floor or slab, denied any human contact, fed nothing but something called Nutriloaf, and given just a modicum of toilet papers, 4 squares, only a few times. The treatment of our own prisoners should shock the conscience, not just of judges, but of all of us. We have versions of Abu Ghraib right here at home. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Guy James means straight talk and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
you'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil, that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Burst radio program, the last half hour of the show. Glad to be back with you. I am now known in the chat room as Darling. It's an inside joke. You got to go there and check it out and find out why, okay? Joining us on the line is our wonderful friend from Texas, Miss Cassie. Cassie, how are you doing tonight?
I was doing really good until I just heard that commercial about, or the news report from the Progressive thing about the prisoners.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that news story. I kind of wish I didn't hear it as that.
Don't these people just make you angry, Cassie?
Yeah. And it's sort of what I was calling about, but not, I mean, I wasn't calling about prison. But the reason that I was calling is in school, you know, I'm in ninth grade, and in our textbooks, the way that it talks about American history and the way that it talks about what our country's about and what the rules are and the laws and the Constitution, it's like all of it since George Bush, all of it's a lie. And the how we treat people in prison is part of it.
Isn't it interesting?
But that's not the part that I was thinking about. I was thinking about the stuff about being guaranteed a trial and being guaranteed a lawyer, and when you watch Law and Order on TV and stuff like that, and it's, you know, I want my phone call, I want to call my lawyer.
Right.
You
know, that those protections have gone away, and all they need to do is declare you an enemy combatant. It doesn't matter if you're a U.S. citizen or not.
Just if you stand up and pray on an airplane. They can do that. They can march you off a plane because you stood up to pray on an airplane.
That's right.
Did you hear that scary story today?
Yes, I did. And it's coming down to, there's a word for that. It's called
straight.
I'm sorry?
Those are their priests that they arrested from the airplane.
Yeah.
Awful. Sorry.
You know, it's coming down to that there is a, you know, what's been created in the country has been a certain type of xenophobia. It's this thing about, we've been conditioned to see all foreigners as evil and detrimental to our aims as a country. You know, and a lot of people have bought into that. You know, the Fox News folks, they harp on that all the time. They put down anyone, you know, who doesn't march in lockstep with the neocons and the Bush administration. And Cassie, I got to tell you, it's going to be people like you in ninth grade at 15 years old who are going to be bailing us out of this mess, you know?
Y'all are leaving a big mess, I got to tell you. I mean, when they say how much
bag.
It's going to cost us to pay off all these debts for the war and for giving money to the billionaires, and I think that's going to be part of it. But just getting back to the kind of America, I mean, I don't remember the Kennedy, like I know Bobby Kennedy Jr. I guess it is from the radio, but I don't remember any of the other people that you were talking about, but to get back to when you got a straight deal in this country. I mean, I don't know what, I learned about the New Deal, but, you know, like, just just a decent deal in this country, when it to get back to fair.
Well, there was a time when, you know, and I got to tell you, Cassie, there was a time when the when if you went out and worked, you know, that there was a time that, that the unions, you know, back in the early 1900s, and just a little small history lesson, hope you don't mind. Back in the early 1900s, there was, you know, the corporatists, the John Paul Gettys and others. I'm thinking of the some of the people who own the largest companies in America, you know, worked workers like slaves. They worked them 14 to 16 hours a day. They worked children, you know, your age, you'd already be at work, working 13, 14, 15 hours a day. Seriously.
I know.
You know, the you know, they forced these people to work in conditions that were unsafe. People were being killed all the time by machinery. And, you know, the only thing that, that bailed out America was the advent of the union movement, the American Federation of Labor, and also the IWW, which is the Industrial Workers of the World, fought hard and died. And people like Joe Hill, you know, if you ever have heard the song, there's a song called The Ballad of Joe Hill that talks about those early union struggles. And those people who fought and died, many of them, paved the way for a better life for Americans in the 40s and 50s following World War II. And, you know, during that time period, you know, the golden age of the unions in the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, mid-60s, you know, people were able to make a living and, you know, go to work, make a decent living, put their kids through college, have a couple of cars, you know, and be and you know, working 40 hours a week. You can't do that now. You know, and it's kind of scary because we're returning very much back to that early day, you know, those early days. You know, I read the newspaper now, the want ads, and every one of the, you know, it seems like every other ad are expecting people to work 12-hour shifts, 14-hour shifts. You know, it's really gotten bad because, again, all of those regulatory barriers and all of that stuff that was put into place to protect the average American worker has gone away. And you want to talk about a square deal or a fair deal, you know, the fair deal started being, you know, going away probably before you were born.
Yeah.
You know? But it's going to be people like you who learn about this stuff, who take an active role in reshaping our country and being vocal about it, that's going to make the changes. You know, and obviously I'll be a part of that too, Cassie, but I really believe that the future of this country rests in people like you and my son and my daughters. You know, that one day you guys will be able to fix the screw-ups that we've allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it seems like a lot of people don't even care. Like, they don't know that things are better in other countries and that things were better here a long time ago, and they just don't really even think about it. You know, it's like everybody just thinks, oh, I'm the only one whose mom has to work three jobs, or I'm the only one who, you know, who this or that, and not right. that they're doing this to us. And I was thinking, I was hearing on one of the other programs talking about what they said, I'm going to get the place wrong, what they said to George Bush's father today.
It was in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates.
Right, okay. That in the United Arab Emirates, what they were saying to him, and it's like, they don't, you know, we're not learning anything about all the stuff that I've learned about how things affect people. I learned from the radio and from the chat room. I didn't learn any of it in school. And maybe I just didn't get there yet, but I don't think so. Because a lot of the people I know that are in college and that are older than me, they don't know about this stuff. They don't, you know, they don't know that it's not their fault they can't find a job that pays benefits.
Right.
That it's because you know, it's because the employers are doing it, and it's because of the union, it's because they're not having unions, and that it's not, you know, I don't know. It's just, I want it to go to the way that it used to be, or I want it to go to a way that's even more fair, and it sounds like in Europe, in a lot of places, that it's a lot more fair, the way that things are more equal than they are here. And they tell, you know, they always say that this is, you know, that we're all created equal and stuff, but they, that's like only in the history book.
And sadly, Cassie, you know, that what you just said is very true. You know, the chances of one coming from a rags-to-riches story is getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer because the majority of the wealth is being concentrated. You know, the majority of the wealth is being concentrated right now with the most wealthy.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be as much of a pie or, you know, as much of a piece of a pie to go around, you know?
Right. And, I mean, you know, I know, like I say all the time, that I'm going to go to college and I'm going to get a scholarship and stuff. And chances are I am going to get a scholarship, but I also know that the chance of me starting where I'm at to get to finish college and be able to get a good job is a lot less than someone who has a family with two parents and money. You know, and that it still comes down to that a lot.
Well, maybe we need to start a college fund for you, Cassie. Hey, we need to do it now, don't we?
I think people need an eating fund before I need a college fund.
You know what? That's that one sentence right there just made my day. You know, and you know what? That's very touching. And that's the kind of spirit. That's exactly the kind of spirit that we had in this country at one time, rather than one of greed. You know. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Good to talk to you. Oh, and Chino Dub says hi.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she says she misses everybody.
Tell her if you talk to her that I said hi back, and I hope she's doing well.
Okay, I will.
All right. Bye. Well, thank you for calling in tonight.
Yeah, good talking to you. Bye.
Good talking to you too. See ya. That's our good friend Cassie calling in from Texas, our 15-year-old that listens to the program every night. And, you know, we need more kids like her. Let's go straight over to our good friend Wayne, who is patiently waiting online. Wayne, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing real good, man. And that young lady just made me feel a whole lot better. That's a very remarkable statement she just made.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Out of the mouth of babes, right?
Yes, that's great. But listen, I want to talk about a little shock and awe that's happening also.
Okay.
I think the CEO and the management of Smithfield men, whatever they call themselves, is in shock and awe.
Yes, and they are.
The CEO and management of Chevron are in shock and awe. I mean, have you seen the janitor's victory?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, Wayne, I talked about it in the last half hour of the show last night, both of those situations, talking about major victories for these folks. And I haven't heard what happened at Smithfield today, because I think they were going to be continuing negotiations today. Have you heard anything about what happened today?
Well, you know, I mean, they've rehired everybody that was fired, and, you know, they're sitting down and talking, which is... you know, over 1,000 people walked out, over a fifth of their workforce walked out. And I think you're going to see some significant changes there, some very significant changes. You know, once people become emboldened and empowered like that, there ain't no stopping them, buddy. And, you know, these janitors in Houston, I mean, I don't know if you saw any of the pictures of, I mean, you know, police on horseback trampling through the, I mean, trampling janitors. The
yeah.
horses were stuck.
Yeah.
And these people didn't give up.
No, they didn't.
And
there was one lady who had been, who was trampled and was crying out, but she refused to allow the police to take her away.
Yes.
She went limp, and instead, you know, her fellow janitors picked her up and carried her over to the sidewalk. That's the kind of energy and kind of commitment that we had back in the early 1900s, man.
Well, I think you're seeing it again, buddy. I'm going to tell you, the labor movement is alive and well and growing. I mean, things are happening that just, I can't mention the city, but, you know, I have had city workers approach me about joining the union that, you know, I mean, it just doesn't happen like this. It's absolutely amazing, and it's very inspiring. You know, these janitors in Houston, I mean, their tentative contract, in the next 3 years, these people's pay will increase 126%.
I know it.
You know, which still, you know, even with all that, it won't be a living wage, but that's a pretty significant contract. You know, a pretty significant contract. They're going to have health insurance. They're going to have paid holidays and vacation time and job protection, and with, you know, grievance and disciplinary procedures that, you know, they never had before. I think the American worker is finally waking up, and, you know, all we need is for our new Democratic Congress to pass the Employees Free Choice Act, and, you know, American workers will start getting the respect that they deserve. And that comes through unions. And, well, I'm beside myself at some of the things that are happening here lately. I've been working at this for a while, and sometimes it gets pretty discouraging. And you have to take little wins, and, you know, that has to be your prize for the year sometimes. And, you know, what's happened in the last couple of weeks here is just absolutely amazing. And I hope it continues. You know, when people stand together like the janitors did, and those Smithfield workers, you can affect change, and that's what people have to do, you know.
Absolutely.
And I mean, can you imagine? I mean, these janitors were working for Chevron. I mean, with record profits, and these poor people are working for minimum wage.
And they're taking billion-dollar profits going, you know, into their retirement accounts and their golden parachutes. I think it's absolutely, and you know what, people, the working people of our nation are going to see that, and they're going to say to themselves, you know what, my damn package ain't so great either. Maybe we can, you know, this is prime time. I mean, you know, these two successes. Now I'll make another prediction. You want to hear another prediction?
I'm ready. You've been right so far. And I've been pretty good, except that Steeler one. But, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Well,
what
the season ain't over yet. You know, I mean, we won again the other day. You know.
It could happen.
Yeah. Let me hear your prediction.
My prediction is that these two successes are going to spark off some renewed and reinvigorated unionizing across the South.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, look where these two things happen.
North Carolina and Texas.
And Texas. I believe that's the South. And, you know, I'm just thrilled to death. I think it's wonderful. Talking about the police horses and stuff, I read somewhere where one of those janitors was 84 or 86 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Working for $20 a day, man.
Yeah. And they were only allowed to work four hours a day, which that's getting changed in this contract, too. You know, it's, well, I think it's a sign of things to come, and I'm looking forward to it. And what, Cassie, is it?
Yeah, Cassie.
That young lady's name. You know, I'll tell you another thing that she doesn't read in school and learn history about is the labor movement and labor fights, you know. And that's something that, well, that should be part of, you know, the curriculum in all schools.
I know it. And what amazes me about that is that there are teachers' unions in the schools, and yet they don't even teach union history.
No, they don't. Well, it's suppressed. You know, I told you where I was born and raised, Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, was the a Supreme Court case that decided the constitutionality of the National Labor Relations Act. And I went to, I went all through school, graduated high school, and I didn't learn that there. I wasn't taught that in school. And, I think it's been a, labor history has been suppressed forever, and that has to change, because if people know the history and know what working people went through, it'll help change things. It'll surely help change things. And
absolutely,
I see that happening. I see that happening.
Well, I do too, Wayne, and you know what? I will do my part here to try to push forward that idea, because the bottom line is that unions have done an incredible amount of good for this country, and despite those people, those corporatists that are in charge, we've got to do something. And you're doing the good work, my friend, and I really appreciate you calling in tonight.
Well, and listen, don't forget the labor movement's role in this last election, buddy.
Absolutely.
You know, it was...
You guys delivered the votes.
Worked their butts off. But I know it's top of the hour, pal. And,
well,
you said you were going to call me.
I'm going to. I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll do it tomorrow.
You got all
right,
my numbers, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Almost all of them.
Yeah, I don't know if I have any more than you got, but, you know.
I got your number, buddy.
Okay, pal. Have a good evening.
Man. You too, Wayne. Great talking with you.
All right, man.
That's our good friend Wayne calling in from the wonderful state of West Virginia. Good, positive, amazing labor organizer that he is, to call in and talk about exactly what's going on in the labor movement. And, you know, folks, just to wrap this thing up tonight, I just want to say, idealism is a good thing. It's okay to not be scared. It's okay to have positivity. It's okay to look forward to the next day and the good fight, because the good fight, folks, is where you and I are. We're trying to take back this country. We're trying to create a democracy that is worth defending, right? Isn't that what patriotism is? Patriotism is ensuring that your country is worth defending, isn't it? Well, the only way we can do that is a day at a time. The only way that we can do that is by our actions when we walk out every day and we go and do what we need to do. I'd like to thank you all for joining me. Thank you, Bob, John, Peter, Gene. Hi-ya! All the mods in the chat room, all of the folks, Ben Birch at the WhiteRoseSociety.org, go check him out. It's been a wonderful evening tonight, and thank you, listeners, and also thank you to the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. That's right. We're union-driven, aren't we? I'd like to thank you all for listening, and remember, folks, it's your democracy, too. And it's not a spectator sport. That means get involved. Get off your arse. Go do something. This is Bruce Birch. I will see you tomorrow.
From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talk of solidarity and refuse to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution.
listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Beirut, a Lebanese cabinet minister, Pierre Gamayel, was assassinated today. He was part of a prominent Christian family in Lebanon and the fifth anti-Syrian political leader to be killed over the past 2 years. His car was rammed from behind, and then at least three gunmen came out and shot him at point-blank range, according to the country's official news agency. Lebanon's political stability appears to be threatened as the country enters into one of the largest political crises in a generation. Massive street protests are planned by Hezbollah and other Syrian allied parties. They are demanding more political power from the Lebanese government of Prime Minister Sinoura. The United States State Department denounced the murder as terrorism. The U.S. has accused Syria and Iran of attempting to overthrow the Lebanese government. Syria, too, condemned the killing today. Making a stop in Hawaii on his way back to Washington from his 8-day trip to Asia, President Bush today met with U.S. troops stationed on the island. Also today, at least three police motorcycles, part of the president's security escort, were involved in an accident. Two officers were hospitalized in serious condition. U.S. and Iraqi forces conducted a raid of Sadr City today, the Baghdad slum controlled by the Shiite anti-American cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Seven militia members were detained. The military said they may have information about the American soldier who was kidnapped last month in Baghdad. Also in the fortified Green Zone in Baghdad today, a bomb meant to kill the speaker of the Iraqi parliament exploded inside one of his armored cars. He was unharmed. However, his driver was injured. At Camp Pendleton today, a third Marine entered a plea agreement in connection with the killing of an Iraqi man in April in Hamdaniya. He pleaded guilty today to lesser charges in exchange for his testimony about the incident. A United Nations panel has criticized Israel for its actions in the 34-day war against